Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and on this week's episode, we're taking a look at our flop shouts and dark horses at the World Cup so far.
A horrible tournament, top to bottom. They're all old. They're even saying they're old. This has been a tournament to forget.
We're looking ahead to the knockout stages and predicting who we think will go all the way.
Don't like it.
But I've gone for England.
What? Patrick Van Straten's predicting England to get to a World Cup final.
They've got about as good a route to the World Cup final as they could hope for. And of course, we bring you the burn book. Honestly, if I was ordering a steak medium and a waiter went, seriously, sir, medium, I'd be like, burn it. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to order two, burn one of them, throw it away. While over on the paid side, we answer your questions about the World Cup. You know, they were like, right, we've got the Ballon d'Or winner who's going to start up front for us at this World Cup. And they lost him before the tournament. And he doesn't show.
I think they're more functional without him if this is the system they're going to commit to.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And we'll round it off with some anything but football questions. That's all on this week's episodes of Unseen Incidents. So hello, one and all, and a special hello to my co-host, Peter Dorman. How are you, Pete?
Hello, I am very, very well. How are you, Patrick?
I'm good. I was just taking a drink of my G&T there. I've opened a new bottle of Roku, specially for it. I'm feeling good. Downstairs today, loft is too cold.
The listeners won't actually know this, but during your intro there, I was pouring a very loud glass of wine. I don't know if you heard it.
I didn't, but will it come through on your side?
Yes, but it will be taken out in post, obviously, but I just thought it might be distracting to you to hear the glug of a lovely bottle of red wine.
Absolutely not. I think it's one of, isn't it one of the world's most pleasurable sounds?
Well, I mean, there's some contenders, I'm sure, but yes, I enjoy the sound.
Number one, yeah. Apart from, well, everything my daughter says, and then number two, glug of booze going into a glass. Mm. It does look very nice, I've got to say.
Again, I've gone for the Porta 6 again, the famous tramway. wasn't a hugely conscious choice. It was in the drinks cabinet.
I'm so glad I can see you over Zoom, so I can see you checking the legs of your glass of wine as we prepare to shoot this episode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not going to apologize for being classy.
Oh God, we're going off the rails already, man. We're going off the rails already. We were totally normal before we hit record, and then suddenly everything goes to shit. But this week's episode should be a good one because obviously the World Cup's been going on, and despite all our many objections, which were covered on previous episodes, I do think this World Cup has sort of taken off after a pretty exciting group stage. It took a couple of, there are a lot of nil-nils in there, but it took a couple of shock results, I'd say, to kind of get the blood flowing. And now, big teams dropping out, minnows getting through, excitement all around. I've just done my World Cup bracket predictor for the final. I've gone extremely punchy. So I'm feeling pumped about the World Cup. Pete, have you been enjoying it?
I'm really surprised at how positive you've been about the World Cup. I'm really quite surprised at that because...
Qatari shill that I am.
Well, yeah. Maybe it's me just focusing too much on the negatives, which, again, isn't like me, really. Mm-hmm. I just think that a lot of this World Cup has reminded me how boring international football can be.
Yeah.
So some of the games have been great, right? And it is always great to see when, like, okay, for example, Saudi Arabia beating Argentina 2-1. Fantastic, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. But that England-US game was awful.
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
There have been so many games that have just been genuinely put me to sleep.
Yeah, but you just don't watch all the games. You watch like 10 minutes of it, and then you say, this is going to be crap, and you turn it off. That's the advantage of the World Cup. There's always more football.
Yeah. Four games a day for... Well, not anymore, but there were four games a day for...
Yeah. Now we're in that bleak period where they have to start playing the fixtures at the same time, and it's extremely annoying because you think, no, I just want to put on the football in the morning.
Yeah, that is annoying, Having both games at the same time.
But, you know, obviously this episode of Unseen Incidents is brought to you by Qatar Airways. Yeah. We love Qatar. Wouldn't that be fucked up if I was just like, oh, Qatar Airways are paying us £100 million market rate?
I would say yes a million times.
I'd rather we had that money than you know, any sort of nefarious arsehole somewhere. You know, better that we get it.
Us totally not nefarious arseholes.
Yeah, exactly. We're just totally chill guys. So should we move on to talking about the World Cup? Because I'd say that so far, some of our predictions have been very good, very strong. Some of them, very bad. So can I lead off with a really bad one?
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about
it
too much. Obviously, you know, we don't discuss our failings. We sweep them under the rug. But I have to take personal responsibility for calling Denmark dark horses. To be honest, them not getting through would have been one thing, but the scale of their underperformance has been pretty staggering, because it was not a tough group. And don't get me wrong, you know, fair play to Australia getting out of that group. But Denmark finished bottom in a group that features Tunisia and Australia. Australia, I feel good about it because I'm fond of them. But do they have any good players, Australia?
Not really. I looked at their squad. It's pretty dodgy. Only two of their players play in a top five European league.
Yeah, and it's all just like this is Mitch. He's going to play up front today. And this is Greg. He's going to go in goal. He brought his own gloves. Well done, Greg. Yeah. And we'll see what happens. And they're like genuinely a bored guy scored the most incredible goal. An amazing header, which I wonder if it is easier if headers are more predictable when you are bored.
I think it depends on the type of header. If it's a glancing header, you know, that could be quite a slippery surface and some hair might give a little bit of friction and a little bit of grip on the ball.
Put a bit of spin on it.
But I think if you're looking for pure power, I think a shiny head can only be a good thing. There's no cushion there.
Yeah,
like the cushion of a quiff can only be negative in a trajectory of the ball.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about Zinedine Zidane's headbutt on Materazzi was greatly enhanced by the fact that he's a bald man, I think. It makes the image so much cleaner. Because it's like the cue ball striking the black, you know, just really pure. You can hear the noise of him connecting with his sternum.
That's the strangest thing about that whole thing, the way he headbutted him in the sternum.
I know.
I'm not a person who's ever tried to headbutt anybody, but I imagine if I did, sternum wouldn't be very high in the list of like body parts I'm aiming for, unless of course that was level with my head.
Yeah. Oh yeah, fair point.
Like he's had to crouch down. We're getting off topic here.
No, but it's as if he's thought, I'm not going to headbutt him in the face. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
But I'll headbutt him in like the solar plexus and just see if I can stop his heart.
Yeah.
I mean, Materazzi, I do still think that's maybe the greatest one-man performance of all time. Materazzi in that game, he scored, I think. He got Zidane sent off. He might have given away a penalty. And then I think he scored in the penalty shootout as well. It was one of the most dramatic cameos of all time. But anyway, yeah, off-piste. Denmark, crap. Don't really know what was wrong there. Australia, I think, massively overperformed given their underlying numbers. And fair play to them. You know, I'm happy to see Australia succeed. Denmark did have the issue, which we said they might have, which was scoring goals. And to be fair, everyone said they were dark horses and everyone said they might have trouble scoring goals. And both of those things, one of those things was very true, the other not as much.
Yeah, but I think when a lot of people said they might have trouble scoring goals, they meant in the knockout stages. Looking at that group, there was no permutation that I ever foresaw that would have them bottom of the group on one point with Australia advancing.
Yeah, though, I mean, bottom of the group. Yeah, I mean, Tunisia beating France's B team makes it a bit worse than it would otherwise be.
Well, yes, you have to. I'm not really taking that Tunisian result with any like real value because of how ludicrous that team was. Like, Camavinga started at left back.
Yeah, that was weird.
So that's very much a we're through. Let's try something, right?
Yeah, sure. Let's run out. Though,
let the boys play. Like, just, it's a nothing game. Let's try something.
or if we win it, we want everyone to get a medal type thing.
So I'm not really putting much focus on that result, but just I think everybody's concerns about Denmark weren't that they wouldn't get through the group. It was that when they did get through the group and face, say, a Germany or a Spain in the round of 16, they would then be like, okay, they might struggle to score there, and that's when they'll go out. And that's for a team that has performed as well as Denmark has done at previous tournaments, that would probably be a bit of a disappointment. Whereas this...
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Catastrophic. Catastrophic failure, this.
Coming bottom of your World Cup group, I mean, Tunisia as well, like, no disrespect to Tunisia, but the other day, I sat in the office and I said, do I know any Tunisian players? And to be fair, a couple of people named some guys I had heard of, but I was just like, I literally work in this professionally, and I just can't think of Tunisian players, to be honest with you. But that's fine. That's fine. Let's move on from that. Okay, Denmark. Bad shout. We had some better shouts. I had some questions about Germany. Now, it looks at the time of recording that Germany are going to go through, but I do think they've been pretty unconvincing. I thought they... Look, the XG suggests they were like they created more against Japan, but I do think when you actually watch that game and you look at the shape of it, I think that was a deserved loss. I think they were really naive, and Japan just adjusted in the second half and kind of blew them away. You know, the first half, I think it was Germany had like 14 shots to one. Second half, it was 12 to 11. And Japan used the wings so well and essentially forced Germany's centre-backs to defend in wide areas, and they couldn't do it. And I stand by my feeling that Germany are pretty unconvincing. They could get it together. They've got a lot of talent, but I just don't. And actually, as I recall, the 2014 World Cup, they had some teething issues in the group stages. But I'm not all that convinced. Your shout, Belgium.
Yeah.
That horse came in.
Oh, lovely. They, horrible tournament, top to bottom. Horrible tournament. They're all old. They're even saying they're old. This has been a tournament to forget for Belgium. And I think it's kind of a shame in the fact that this is the end of that generation, and this is how it's ended. You know, it would be nice for them to kind of have a little bit of a more romantic end, not necessarily a win, but something that wasn't historically bad. Yeah. Like I said in the previous weeks, this just seems like another what could have been tournament for them, or what might have been. We have the players that are good enough and should be achieving this level, but we always fall short. Now, granted, they haven't fallen this short before, not with this crop of players, but there just seems to be a real defeated aura about that group of players now. I think they're just spent. You know, Kevin De Bruyne came out. Well, in the interview with The Guardian before the tournament started, that was only just released, He literally said that they can't win the World Cup because they're too old.
I know.
He said that as probably their best player going into the tournament, which is mental. And there's
correct.
But yeah, absolutely correct. But even though they've come out and said that there is no like rift in the dressing room, that's got to create some form of animosity in the dressing room. If you're like a Jan Vertonghen, and you see that Kevin De Bruyne has been like, we're too old to win the World Cup, you'd be fuming.
Especially because I was thinking about this. Can you think of a star player at this World Cup so far who has played worse than Kevin De Bruyne individually? I know he got that assist against Canada for Batshuayi, but every time I saw him in that game, we're going to talk a bit about Canada later, over on the paid side, he just got crowded out, and I thought he was just misplacing passes left and right. Yeah. I mean, I thought he had a shocking tournament.
Yeah. The fact he went into the tournament with that mentality, I think, is telling. You know, the wee man just wants a summer holiday. It's not even summer, it's winters. I just didn't see this going any other way for Belgium, to be honest. Like, they're all declining significantly. Kevin De Bruyne outside of that, but like, you know, Eden Hazard's 31, but he seems to have been declining since he's...
Oh, my God.
Since he set foot outside of Stamford Bridge, he's been on a significant decline.
Mm-hmm.
Vertonghen's 35, Odavarald and Axel Witselboek's 33. Like, they were what they went quarterfinals, semifinals, quarterfinals in the last three tournaments, and then yeah, because they lost to Wales in the quarterfinals of the year 2016.
That was
they
mental.
Lost in they lost to France in World Cup semifinal 2018, mm-hmm. and then to Italy in the quarterfinals of Euros, right? But it feels like those the chances of the of this crop of players actually winning something was that Wales game and that France game.
Yeah.
2016 and 2018, that was their chance. 2020, like last year, year and a half ago, they did. They were still a bit old. They were still a bit, like, if they'd have won that tournament, it would have been very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
But that having Wales in the quarterfinal of a Euros, like, you've got to win that game. Absolutely got to win that game. And then you're in a semi-final of a World Cup with all your players, all your big players pretty much at peak age.
Mm.
Like, that, that's your tournament.
Even the last World Cup, man. I mean, okay, they came up against France, but there were weaknesses in that France team. And if they'd got through, then they'd have come up against Croatia or England in the final, neither of which was particularly impressive. They're both decent sides, but neither one was great. England are better now, in my opinion. Yeah, you'd have backed them to win it. But I, to me, I know I've kind of said this before, so I'm not going to harp on about it, but I kind of think the die was cast when they hired Roberto Martinez. I just think that was such a terrible hire, especially because the weaknesses of this squad were in the fullback areas and actually eventually in defensive midfield as well, because obviously Moussa Dembele aged out and I don't think Witsel was ever as good as everyone thought he was, and Tielemans never was going to play as a proper six or anything. So you needed somebody who could create a solid defensive structure and just let the attacking players play. And Roberto Martinez is almost the opposite of that. They'd have actually been great with a really defense-first manager, I think. But they never did it. They never seemed to have a system that worked. I don't really care. It is a waste of a generation, but I just think that that was their fault for hiring Roberto Martinez when they did.
I mean, that's all fair, but also I think there are significant players who individually just haven't turned up at all this tournament. Kevin De Bruyne is one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the game today, but Lukaku, when he came on, was he couldn't hit a barn door, right? And he got huge chances in a game that they essentially had to win. They knew they came into that being like, we need to beat Croatia to progress. And he had three or four nigh-on sitters that he missed. And interestingly, his expected goals tally in that second half was more than Morocco's entire group stage.
Oh my God.
From the team. So Morocco's entire, like, Morocco's entire team's expected goals for the group stage is 1.35. Lukaku alone from that second half is 1.98.
1.98?
In the second half alone.
Oh my God. At the same time, though, I mean, the Morocco game isn't on him, and that is a game they should have won. But yeah, I mean, Azar just, like, can't run.
It's not on him personally, but that game there when he wanted, when Belgium needed to win, he was the person that was put on, and he was one in the position to finish the chances.
No, fair enough. But I mean, other teams, we talked about France's bust potential. We'll talk about them a bit more on the paid side. England, pretty much fine. I mean, maybe a couple of alarm bells with the USA game, but comfortably the better team against Wales, comfortably the better team against Iran. You'd hope they have another gear to go to, because there are still guys like Mason Mount who aren't really producing very much. But the fact they were able to play a rotated team, except for Kane, who's just the world's stupidest man. I really don't understand why Southgate is letting Kane determine when he plays. Kane should absolutely have been rotated for that last group game. You can always bring him on if you need him. It's just completely unnecessary. And this is the thing, managers always talk about, like, how Kane wants to play. Yeah, your job is to tell him when he can't. Tell him to sit on the bench. It's for the best. I don't understand it. You need a fresh Kane. Maybe not even in the next round, but in the round after that, for sure. You do not need Kane for 90 minutes of a dead rubber, basically. Yeah. Not dead rubber, but, you know, a match that really is not going to decide your future at the World Cup.
Yeah, it was a match that England would have had to lose by 4 clear goals to have potentially gone out.
Yeah.
I think that was the result that would have seen them fall out of the qualification spot. So that's not going to happen. No. Also, Wales, awful in this tournament as well.
Wales have been awful. But I mean, even when they were quote unquote good at that Euros, they weren't that good. And now, I mean, like Ramsey just can't run. Bale works as hard as he can, but he works hard for a whatever he is, 33-year-old. So I'm not terribly surprised about Wales. And in a way, their tournament was a success the moment they qualified, right? It had been such a long period of time without getting to the tournament that they just kind of needed to end that.
With Wales, they played as I expect. Well, they probably played a bit worse than I expected, but I didn't expect anything from them.
Sure.
And again, it was that England game was really, really strange because they looked pretty toothless and they looked pretty defeated. And that was a do or die game. If they won that game,
yeah,
there was a world that they could have gone through, or even just to be like, okay, we won 1-0 and still went out, but at least we beat England and left on a good note. But they were just absolutely toothless. They looked like they couldn't be arsed.
And they were comfortably the worst team against Iran.
Yeah.
I thought that overall they were worse against the USA. You know, they keep talking up how good they were in the second half, but I mean, they were so bad in the first half, it might not have mattered. I don't know. I guess I just don't expect that much from Wales because I look at that squad and I think, this is one of the weakest squads at the World Cup. I did expect a bit more than that, though. But because it feels like it's stronger than it is because Ramsey and Bale used to be so great. So you kind of think, oh, here are two stars, but actually not really.
But yeah, with England, I predicted them as a flop, and it's too early to say because for them, they'll need to go further in the tournament to avoid being called a flop for sure.
Sure.
But from what I've seen of them in the three games they've played, it's kind of they're just middling. They're a middling team in this tournament.
Really?
I
think they've been quite impressive.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. Because I think they've been... When you think about the Euros, or even the World Cup before that, quite often they were grinding through games, or it was, you know, Raheem Sterling doing a bit of magic to get them through. It was overwhelmingly kind of individuals, I thought, pulling them off, or set pieces. But actually... Though I don't think they were as good as the scoreline suggests against Iran, they were miles better than Iran. And I thought they used their players pretty well. I think the fact that they've kind of changed system to some degree, and in the absence of Walker in that game, still looked... Okay, they gave up two goals, but they still looked really strong defensively. The Wales game was just kind of easy for them. Okay, the USA game was pretty bad, but even in a game that they gave up a ton of shots and played significantly worse than the opposition, it was about level on XG. They didn't lose. It's not terrible stuff. I mean, sometimes that happens at the World Cup, and actually, find me a team in this tournament so far who've been convincing in every single game, because I'm not sure there is one.
There hasn't been a team... obviously, the teams that will be convincing in every game are the big teams, right? And none of them, all of them have had a hiccup. All of them have had a period where they've looked vulnerable and looked dodgy. And I'm not saying that means that England are any worse or better than them. It's just that I think that as good as England were against Iran and Wales, I think the bigger factor wasn't how good England were. It was how bad the opposition was. Iran didn't turn up in that first game at all. Like, the Iran that played Wales were a completely different side than the Iran that played England.
Yeah.
And Wales didn't turn up at all. They just looked dumb. The one team that actually kind of sat and played was the US, and England really, really struggled.
Yeah, but I also think the US may be a bit better than people think.
They are.
I think the US is an interesting team.
I think the US are a good team, but I think a team that will struggle to beat that level of team is a middling team in this tournament, which is why I think England are a middling team.
But we've seen it at previous World Cups, you know, like we've seen We've seen Argentina struggle to beat Iran in the tournament. They made the final. You know, we've seen teams go through on penalties in World Cups and go on to win it. We've seen teams lose at World Cups and go on to win it. It's even that, you know, incredible Spain side lost at the World Cup they won in 2010. So I just kind of think I will withhold judgment because I think Senegal are actually quite an interesting test. If England just roll through against Senegal, then my estimation of England will go up because I don't think Senegal are great, but I think they're dangerous and they gave the Netherlands a really good game. So if England just rolled them over, then suddenly I think, okay, this is one of the superior teams at the tournament. If they labour against them as well, then I'll start to get a little bit worried. But should we move on then to the fixtures? Because we're kind of already talking about fixtures for the knockout stage. I mean, the one thing I will say is that a pleasant surprise, I think, has been the quality of some of the quote-unquote poorer teams. I think, you know, when I go through the list of the inferior sides, I think it's a bit tough to put some of these in there. But the USA, Japan, Morocco, Canada, Tunisia, Cameroon, all those teams at certain points in this tournament have outplayed more talented sides. Saudi Arabia, you could argue, but I think it would be a strong shout to say Saudi Arabia outplayed Argentina. But again, I think we can come on to that when we get into Argentina predictions. And I just think, before the tournament, I remember talking to England fans and them saying, oh, you know, it's really bad, though. We've only got two really amazing midfielders in Bellingham and Rice. And I thought, a load of these teams don't have a single good midfielder, man.
Yeah.
And it goes to show what a plan to maximise the one or two stars you have can do, or some smart adjustments on the fly, as we saw from Hervé Renard with Saudi Arabia, as we saw with Japan. Some of the in-game adjustments made by these teams are really, really impressive. It speaks to a high level of tactical understanding. I think Cameroon have had really impressive moments. So, yeah, I don't know. That's been nice.
Also, I think it's kind of, or it seems easier to implement that without a team of stars, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
Having a team of stars trying to implement changes on the fly, or say we're going to play this way that doesn't, granted, doesn't, you know, suit your style best, but it suits the team better. If you're saying that to somebody who is a Premier League star on £200,000 a week, you're more likely to get pushback or just ignoring it, or they're still trying to back themselves and do their own thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, these smaller teams, I think they've genuinely bought in as a unit, and that's a bit of a leveler at international football. Right?
That's quite a good point, yeah, because I guess that's kind of what happened with Denmark. I mean, obviously with a higher talent level, but even now, you know, you think with England, there are people saying, well, Mount shouldn't be playing over Foden because he's in poorer form. And Southgate says, yeah, but Mount does things that I need that guy to do. And everyone's furious about it. But that's essentially the point, right? It's like, I need the guy who buys into my system and does what I tell him, rather than the most talented player in the best form. Because actually, maybe what you think is important, which might just be goals and assists, is less important to me in this particular role. Mm-hmm. The same as with Maguire. He clearly prizes certain abilities Maguire has and worries less about some of the things Maguire's poor at.
I mean, Southgate has proven that he's got his people, he's got his guys that he always trusts. You know, Sterling, for example, and Maguire being one. Maguire's barely played in the last 2 months in the lead up to the World Cup, and he's started. And he's been decent.
Yeah, he's been good.
So yeah, I mean, Southgate, I suppose, is probably in that sense, is dealing with the biggest egos and making those decisions. Like tough decisions, more so than probably I would say other. I don't see another manager getting the same criticism for the Foden thing, for example, than at that level.
I mean, I can imagine, knowing the French football press, that Deschamps is getting some shit right now, especially
France,
after that.
France
Tunisia
was the only one I considered, but yeah.
If Italy were here, it would be happening. 100%, it would be happening. Though actually, you know, Mancini, good coach. Should we move on to our knockouts then? Because just before this started, we completed our bracket, so that's quite exciting. Hang on a minute, I've just got to reach for my gin. I put it out of reach. Can't forget the tonic. Okay.
Why is it tonic? Is it Schweppes or is it...
It's Fevertree.
Oh, good. Good.
It's Fevertree Mediterranean. Okay. You know, because I'm a sunshine boy. Okay. We'll leave all that in. Okay, first up on the docket, I've got to say, one of the interesting fixtures of the second round, Netherlands-USA. Mm-hmm. Netherlands-USA. What have you got?
As much as I don't know why I like the USA, but I kind of do. And I thought they were quite difficult to play against for England. But if that said, I still can't look past the Netherlands in this game.
Really?
Yeah. You can. You think you...
I've predicted the Netherlands to win. I have. Okay. But I think the USA are dangerous. I think the Netherlands have been pretty dull, which is fine. You know, I knew LVG wasn't going to make them exciting, but I thought they really laboured against Senegal and were probably a little bit lucky to win that one. Obviously not good against Ecuador. Pretty good against Qatar, but it's Qatar. So I don't know, really. I mean, they've got out of the group with no real issues. But if they were to go a goal behind, that would be interesting. Because we don't know if they have the ability to change gears offensively. We don't know what they're like if they give up a goal first, which is, you know, something that's quite likely to happen on this side of the draw, and then they have to go out and get a goal. And I don't know, I still think it's kind of like, oh, it's just De Jong in midfield, and he doesn't really want to start Korpmeiners, or it seems that he doesn't. He's still persisting with Dumfries over Frimpong. But I mean, look, as I said at the beginning of the tournament, LVG is going to do sensible stuff. They're not going to be embarrassed. And we'll see what they can do. But I actually think that Greg Berhalter, the US coach, is having a really good tournament. Because he's made some really big personnel choices. And some of them I don't agree with. You know, like guys like Haji Wright. I just don't play him. He sucks. But some of his big personnel choices have paid off. You know, Cameron Carter-Vickers coming in that last game and persisting with Yunus Musah, up to now, up to and including the present moment, I've not really seen it with Yunus Musah. He's very young. He's playing at a top level. These are very good signs. But when I watch him and when I look at his stats, I think there isn't anything here. And that's okay, you know, because when you're really young, the more you play, the better the chances that you'll become a really good player. But I hadn't really seen it. And then in the Iran game, I kind of did. In the Iran game, I thought that he was really, really impressive. And I think that the way the midfield has worked, particularly in that game, Berhalter has been able to alter it kind of based on opponent. I think Serginho Dest has had a really good tournament. I don't know. They also just have a big issue in this game is going to be what their star ability is. So Gio Reyna came into the tournament not in perfect health. Big question over how many minutes he can give them. Pulisic hurt his balls quite severely.
It looked really bad as well.
It looked
awful.
He was taken to hospital with a pelvic contusion, which obviously means he hit his balls. But I just think, okay, those are the guys who had the little bit of stardust for the USA. Yeah. If they don't have those, I'm not that worried. Whereas, despite how good the defenders are for the Netherlands, I do kind of think, well, Pulisic only needs to, you know, skim one of them once and suddenly they're in trouble, because I don't think they're completely impervious to stupidity, the Netherlands. I mean, again, very defensive system, but teams have piled on the pressure against them pretty successfully. Even Qatar managed to do it at points, but particularly obviously Senegal. But I don't know, Berhalter, I thought, outmanaged Southgate in that England-USA game. It's not unfeasible that he gets another couple of big choices right in this match. They maybe get a lucky goal or something, and suddenly the Netherlands are like, oh God, our only plan so far in this tournament has been for Hakpo to do something crazy. And Hakpo has been good, you know, obviously got three goals, but the three goals are from like 0.3, 0.4 XG, yeah, something like that put together. That's fine. Oh, no, that's
it's
great.
Less than that.
Is it really?
It's 0.26.
Jesus Christ.
He's got three goals from 0.26 XG.
But like, that's fine. Obviously, you know, like, it's a tournament. You win the tournament. You don't give a shit about the XG. That's what we call great finishing, right?
Yes.
But it can't go on forever. Like, nobody finishes like that forever. So you'd want him to be getting more chances to feel a bit more confident about the Netherlands, yeah, is what I'm saying.
I agree with a lot of that. The reason I went for the Netherlands is that, yeah, okay, they did struggle against Senegal, but I would say that Senegal would beat the USA if they played.
Man,
I think Senegal are a better team than the USA.
Holy shit! Can I just update you on the scores that are currently going on?
I've got them here. Both 1-1.
No, apparently Japan are 2-1 up against Spain,
which would put them top of the group and
being
second.
Yeah. Oh my god. Okay, this is excellent. I love it. That backs up some of my predictions. Thank fuck for that.
If I look at that USA team and I look at where I think they're weakest, I would say they're probably weakest in defence.
Yeah, definitely.
Their star players are much more attacking minded, even with Serginho Dest. You know what I mean? Like, he's technically a defender, but really, you know, what he wants to do isn't defend.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think this might be oversimplifying it, but if the Netherlands can stay solid defensively, I think they can unlock that American defense quite easily, much easier than the American attackers can unlock the Dutch defense. And I think that's where that game gets won and lost. I can see Netherlands scoring two goals in that game. I cannot see USA scoring two goals.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Okay, I'd say that the percentage, if they played 100 times, the percentage of games in which the Netherlands would score more than one would be way higher than the percentage in which the USA would. But it is possible that Pulisic is totally fit and Reina can play a full 90 or play 60 minutes or something. And suddenly you're like, okay, this is what this next generation of the US men's national team is meant to look like.
Yeah.
That's completely possible to me. But yeah, I'd say there are more holes in their 11 than there are holes in... To me, the holes in the Netherlands 11 are predominantly LVG saying what you were talking about before. Saying, here's a guy who may not be as talented as the other options, but he'll do what I tell him to do. Whereas with the US, I think some of the holes in their team are because they don't have players who fill those holes. I mean, it's as simple as that.
Yeah. I can see a world where the USA win, but I think that's a world-class moment in one chance that comes and is taken, and it's just one of those games that results defined on that one moment or two moments of just quality from one of their better players.
Sure.
But I think the likelihood and probability-wise is Netherlands for me.
Okay, so should we move down the draw then? Should we do it in kind of draw order? So next up then is Argentina-Australia. Easy. I mean, it's just Argentina.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fair play to Australia for getting this far. no, like, they're just...
Good on, yeah?
Just absolute vibes to get this far. But yeah.
Pure bald energy.
This is, there is no world. I know obviously Argentina lost to Saudi Arabia, but there's no world where this game isn't Argentina.
I think Argentina are, and we'll come on to this, but I think Argentina are really impressive. I think they're really impressive.
I think you might have said this on social media as well. Everybody raved about England's first game and then catastrophized Argentina's first game.
Yeah.
And I think Argentina were probably the better team across, performance-wise. Or at least it's close.
It was close. It was close. It was close, definitely. They both played the game they wanted to play, I think, actually.
I thought Argentina were so unlucky to... It was 10 minutes of just a kind of freak tides of change that changed that game. Two amazing finishes.
And you give up three shots and they score two of them. Like, Jesus, what are you going to do? But like, that is what happens sometimes. And I mean, it's one of those games where I was kind of like, It is an heroic performance by Saudi Arabia. It is. I said an heroic there, by the way, just for anybody listening closely. But if Lautaro Martinez had judged one run better in the first half, it wouldn't have mattered how heroic they were. They would have lost the game. And I thought they pressed really well. And then I thought in the second game, Scaloni was like, we are going to play miserable football. Like, in the second game, he was just like, we're just not losing. We cannot lose this game. We absolutely cannot do it. So they played absolutely horrific football in their second match. And then in the last game, opened the taps again and were really, really impressive. And just like kept Poland to, I think, 4 shots. They had, I think it was like 21-4 on shots in that match. Poland were incredibly lucky to make it out alive. Easily could have given up another goal because I just thought Argentina looked kind of irresistible. And I don't know, like the way they can suffocate teams with their press, I think is really, really quite amazing. And everyone right now is talking shit about guys like Rodrigo de Paul, but he just keeps the ball coming forward for them and Messi keeps getting free. And I just think goals will come for them that way. And actually, I kind of think their biggest issue is that they ended up winning the group. There was a point where they would have loved it if they finished second, because then they'd gone into the other side of the draw, which is way easier. Whereas this side of the draw, it's got Brazil in it, presumably. It could have Spain in it, depending what happens tonight.
It could be Japan.
It could be Japan. But it's not an easy side of the draw. You're going to have to probably beat a really, really top team to make the final. Whereas if they'd ended up on the other side, I'd have been like, who's our biggest competition here? France? I still think that we're probably more reliable than France. Are we more reliable than England? Maybe. So this is an easy one. Argentina through. Who's up next?
Well,
what have you predicted?
It depends. I predicted Spain, Croatia in that game.
So did I. So shall we go through it quickly, just in case we look like tits?
Well, Spain, Croatia. Well, as it stands at the minute as we're recording, it would be Japan, Croatia.
I mean, that changes who goes through. It doesn't change what I think happens in the quarter.
See, in the next round, same. So I predicted Spain to beat Croatia.
Yeah, I predicted Spain to beat Croatia as well. And I actually, I really considered, we'll talk about this when we do proper predictions, but I really considered pushing Spain on to win the whole thing.
You mentioned that before we started recording, and I personally don't see it.
Okay,
not to that level. Given the route they would have to take if they win the group.
Because they'd have to beat probably Brazil, Argentina, and then England, France, probably, Portugal, someone like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. It's tough.
That's mad.
But I think Luis Enrique is a really good manager, and they also have loads of talent, man. They have loads of talent, and they just control games. Yeah. The way they smother you. I just said it about Argentina, but Spain could just take the ball away and keep it for 90 minutes, and it's unbelievable. I mean, obviously, we'll see what happened with this Japan game tonight.
Well, so what's really interesting, though, is if, as it stands at the minute, they would still qualify but go into the other half of the group, right? A second.
Ooh.
So they would play Morocco.
Oh, shit. That would be nuts.
If they finish second, and Germany would finish bottom of the group. At which point their progression to the final would be essentially probably Morocco, Portugal, England, or France.
Okay. Let's leave that for now then. Let's come back to that. I want us to go through the fixtures we've actually got, and then we can make our predictions for the rest of the tournament. That does change things, I've got to say.
And also it looks like Costa Rica have just gone 2-1 up against Germany.
This is a great World Cup, man. I told you. But you know what? You put somebody called Balde in the back of your team, you're going to play like a bald team.
That game will be confirmed in like 20 minutes. So should we move to the ones we can circle back?
Because let's be honest, we'll still be recording in 4 hours. Okay. So next up, I've got Brazil, Ghana. I don't care who goes to.
You don't care?
No, I mean, I don't care who Brazil play.
Oh, right.
They're going to win this game.
But I think that could be quite a fun game.
Have you watched Brazil at this tournament so far? They're not fun.
I think that's a game that they could open up on. You know.
Okay.
I think Richarlison's looked really good. Obviously, Neymar's a huge loss.
Vinny's been good though.
Yeah, Vinny's been great. I don't know. I think there's too much. There's way too much talent in that Brazil team to continue to be as pedestrian or as boring as they've been.
Let's hope. I mean, but again, they're a team who are. Their strength is kind of in defense. What was it? They conceded 3 goals or something in qualifying, something mental. Maybe yeah. It was 6, but they were just devastating defensively in qualifying. And I mean, this tournament so far, that they've given up next to nothing through their fixtures. It's just hard to see who's capable of pulling them apart. You know, you look at a France and you think, okay, there's the talent. That's how they would give up goals. Argentina, there's the talent. But it really does take something like that. Maybe Germany can do it. Germany's attack is pretty good, but I just think they could get shredded at the back. So anyway, Brazil through. Easy, easy.
Yeah.
I say that, you know. I thought that Spain to beat Japan was easy, easy, but here we are.
I've actually just seen the group as it stands. It would be Costa Rica go through as second. As it stands.
Oh, God.
Japan first, Costa Rica second.
Only because they're beating Germany. Hang on, yeah. That can't be true. Spain beat them like 7-0.
Yeah, but Spain are currently losing to Japan.
But Croatia, but Costa Rica would have 4 points.
No, they would have 6 points.
Did they win 2? Oh, yeah, they beat Japan. I keep forgetting they beat Japan. That's so
with their
nuts.
One okay. Shot. Yeah.
Oh, God.
It throws everything out.
They had one shot through their first 2 games and they could make the round of 16. Okay, yeah, right. Well, let's
Germany
move
have
on.
Germany have just gone 2. Yeah.
Okay, that's probably for the best. Let's move on because the permutations are driving me insane. Like that, and we'll talk about this on the paid side, I'm like those fucking scenes, you know, in Marvel movies where like Benedict Cumberbatch is just like seeing different versions of the future. Lame. Okay, let's move on to the next side. England, Senegal. England.
Yeah, England.
Senegal dangerous, but nah.
Senegal dangerous, and also, you know, Senegal without Sadio Mane are a different team. Significantly less dangerous going forward, in my opinion, without Sadio Mane.
Agreed.
And
Idrissa Gueye, post-peak Idrissa Gueye is an issue for them.
Yeah, but... For them to win that game, it's again, it's similar like one of the other games we spoke about, that you need a moment of brilliance from one of your top players. You take one of your players like Mane out and you lose such a threat.
Yeah.
That I think also makes it easier for England to manage that game without him.
Plus, if England have got like a fit Kyle Walker.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. It really does change the situation for them.
Yeah. England, I think... Yeah, as much as I like Senegal, I think England will go easy.
Yeah, I think
easily. ish. They could fuck it up, but it is England.
What have we got next? Come on. Let's not get into it. France, Poland, France. Late 19th century battle. This France, Poland. Poland are fucking dreadful. Yeah, every tournament,
I don't know how they progress.
Every tournament I look at their squad and I kind of talk myself into it and I have to remind myself, no, they're always crap. And they are always crap. They're like Turkey. Turkey turn up and you look at them and you're like, damn, they've got so many good players. Turkey's amazing at producing good players. And then you see them play together and you're like, do these guys know each other? Have they met before? They're like a five-a-side team. And Poland, 4 shots against Argentina, with probably the best number 9 in the world up front. It's pretty miserable stuff. And it's not like they've got no talent everywhere else. They still start Krychowiak in midfield. It's just rank. Whereas France, I think, we kind of talked about this. I think you said this on the other podcast. You said France could implode, but they also could batter Australia game 1 and be fine. And I think that going behind a goal... it just made them open up the taps. And actually, I also think Lucas Hernandez getting injured and them having to bring on Theo Hernandez, who's now created more chances at the World Cup than any other player. That's really given them some nice balance. And, you know, leave aside the last group game, because I do think that was just let's see what we can do with this squad.
Yeah.
they're really, they've looked really good. Tchouaméni has looked really good. Mm-hmm. When you think that they lost N'Golo Kanté and Pogba before the tournament and they look this good, it's scary. And Dembele, I think, has been as good as Mbappe, maybe. And Mbappe's been phenomenal.
I could have seen this being a really bad tournament for France. Essentially, it was one of two things. It was all or nothing. And yeah, they managed to kind of turn it on. And they're hitting their stride. Obviously, like, we take the Tunisia game out because it's a nothing game. But they're coming into this round of 16 as probably the most in-form big team, I would say. Team is probably playing the best.
Big call. But they could...
As a team who could win it, they're probably in the best form.
I think Argentina have maybe been as good. And I think Brazil have just not looked in trouble at any point. But yes, I mean, fair enough. France have been really good. But I think, look, we'll talk a bit more about France on the subscription side, because I do think they're quite an interesting case. But look, I mean, France could go through this fixture, go potentially through the next fixture, lose in the semis, and still consider that a bit of a disappointing tournament. You know, it's entirely possible that would happen, because getting through the round of 16 for France is a gimme, especially when you get drawn against Poland.
I think a semi is the minimum requirement for them. I think they'd see a semi exit as a disappointing result, but it wouldn't be necessarily bad. It would be like, we obviously wanted to get further and we think we were good enough to win it.
Yeah.
But you know, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, okay, it's a very good tournament. We got down to the last four. Sometimes it happens, right? You're going to come up against another good side. Anything south of the semifinals will be considered a failure.
They've also got... They don't have that Belgium problem at all, right? They and England as well, I'd say, are in the same position, where you say, our squad is kind of really young now. You know, you've got Tchouaméni and Camavinga anchoring the side. You've got Dembele and Mbappe on the wings. Okay, Griezmann and Giroud are going to age out, but so what? Because at the back, you've got Theo Hernandez, who's young. You've got Saliba coming through, Koundé coming through, Konate, who's still young. You've got a ton of... You've got so much talent.
Wild.
It's bananas. And Maignan, you know, who's not even fit, because they played Steve Mandanda against Tunisia. Yeah. That just the amount of talent in that country right now is genuinely off the charts. And this is without even getting into players who could start breaking into the team. You know, they've brought Guendouzi to this World Cup, but they could have Kakere starting for them in a couple of years' time. They could have Enzo Lefebvre starting for them. Up front, they could have guys like Kalimu Endo. They could have Moussa Diaby starting for them. Who knows?
That also makes it even more wild that Jordan Veretout started that game against Tunisia.
I know. And why is he playing?
Bad.
He's crap.
He was entirely missing in that game. I don't remember him doing anything of note at all.
But he used to score like five pens a season. And then people would look at his goal numbers and they'd be like... They'd look at his goal numbers. They'd be like, wow, he got 8 goals this season. He must be good. And you're like, they're all fucking penalties. Anyway. Let's not get sidetracked. We're moving on. Okay. Next up, I've got Morocco, Germany, but it could be anyone.
I have that, but we don't know that. So should we skip to the one after that, which we know?
Which is, we don't know it, do we?
Oh, no, we don't know it. But I've got
Portugal, Switzerland.
I've got that as well. And that's not going to change this evening. So.
Yeah, sure. Thank God. It's stressing out.
Yeah, I got Portugal, Switzerland too. And I've been kind of impressed with Portugal.
Yeah, they've been good.
More so than I thought I would be. So, yeah, I mean, it's Portugal. And I've reasonably comfortable victory. I think they'll manage that game fine.
I think so. I
don't think it'll be a spectacular game. I don't think Switzerland offer enough to really cause them a huge amount of problems.
Sure.
And I think Portugal will know that and will set up appropriately. So they'll essentially... It's not the smartest tactic to do, but they'll be looking past that game and they'll play... Their game plan will look past that game.
Well, especially if there is an upset in the group that's playing tonight, because then they'll look at it and think, man, we've got an easy path to a semi-final here.
Realistically could be one of Morocco or Japan. I think.
Which, oh my god!
But it's changed three times since we started recording, so I'm not actually sure.
Yeah, let's not get dragged into it. So should we move on then? Because okay, I think we've talked about those kind of nicely. Let's talk about. Tell me your predictions for the quarterfinal round based on what you've assumed. So you had Netherlands Argentina, right, as your first fixture in the quarterfinals. Who have you gone for?
Argentina.
Same.
Yeah.
The next Spain, one.
Spain Brazil is who I have.
I had Spain Brazil.
I put Brazil.
I've got Brazil as well.
Yeah. Right.
Which I feel good about.
Yeah.
Next up, you've got England France.
Yeah, which I put France.
I've put England.
I thought you would have.
I don't know why.
Based on the conversation we just had, I thought you would have put England.
I really don't know.
I think England are fine. And the reason I said at the top of the show that they're a middling team is that I think they can... They've always been able to beat the lesser teams or the teams that are like just below them. You know, you think of their runs in the last two major tournaments, like the Swedens, right? Yeah. The Denmarks. They've been able to get through those games fine, right? Denmark back when they weren't shit.
But look, the Swedens, the Denmarks, yeah.
all the Scandinavians. So they can get through those games fine. But it's when they come up against like the actual big teams on the biggest occasions that they just seem to never get out of third gear. Like the games against Belgium in the World Cup previous. You know, they're like whenever it's a good team and France are a good team, you just like their squad's incredible. Those games, other than probably Germany in Euro 2020, which again, a soft Germany compared to Germany of age, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a great German side that they beat. They still beat them, and I didn't necessarily back them to do that. I think there's something about England playing at major tournaments in the knockout stages against a good team that it's almost an assumption that they're going to lose.
Yeah, but I do think that's changing. And I do just think, okay, if anyone other than Walker starts at right back in this game against Mbappe, I don't think England will win this game. But...
Well, there's also the question, does Southgate then go back to that five at the back? With
maybe, but I like
Walker England... Walker Trippier duo.
Possibly, but I like England's set pieces more than France. I also actually like their reserve attackers more than France. France have some talented players in their squad, but England can bring on Grealish and Foden, which is crazy when you think about it.
But also, the reason they can bring them on is because Southgate always prioritises function over quality. Right? So he always plays Sterling, right?
Yeah, but if France look out of ideas in this game... I don't know how much Deschamps is willing to give up control, and I don't know what he does other than, you know, play the team he's going to play. Like Giroud, Griezmann, Dembele and Mbappe is his first choice, and it's hard to argue that bringing anyone on for Dembele or Mbappe would ever improve that team. I don't feel like he's likely to take Griezmann off. And Thuram is their replacement for Giroud, who actually is a much worse fit with Dembele and Mbappe. Whereas with England... If they're down a goal with 20 minutes to go and they just throw on Grealish and Foden and say, you know what, do whatever, and maybe they move Saka over to left wing back or something like that, then you kind of think, oh, I could see that. I could definitely see that working. Because I also don't think France's defence... No, it has been good. But I do think it can be got at. And I don't know. I'm just going to pick England on this one. I kind of think that they could do it. And I think that, again, if the chips are down for France, I think it could go to shit. I think Mbappe will get more selfish. I think Dembele will get isolated. If the chips are down for England, I actually think they are quite unified now. I do think they're much more coherent as a squad than France are. Cohesive, even. Anyway, so I've said England, you've said France. Let's move on to the next one, which I've got down as Germany-Portugal. It doesn't really matter though, because I predicted Portugal to go through.
Well, I also have Germany, Portugal, but I predicted Germany to go through.
So you're predicting a Germany-France semi,
yeah,
and an Argentina-Brazil semi, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So best of South America versus best of Europe, basically.
But also, that's all been, or could all be thrown absolutely out of whack based on the results currently.
I know, man. Because I know, because there's like Germany,
Germany currently are going out, and Spain. The thing is, as it stands, Spain are in that second. Half of the group. Yes, so as it stands, Spain are in Germany spot. So Spain, Portugal.
Yeah, I would still go with
Spain,
one.
But that's yeah. Because then a Spain France semi final is quite tasty.
But then from the point of view of predicting who could get to the final, you're much better off picking someone from the England France side just because it's much more certain they'll be there. Okay. So you're picking you're picking Germany, I'm picking Portugal.
Yeah.
And I think Portugal as well, you know, again, they're game-changing options. Being able to bring on Leao, who's one of the most exciting young forwards in the world, I think they look way better when he's on the pitch than when Ronaldo's on the pitch. And that's not just my agenda. I mean, they really do look a lot better.
No, I agree. But the kind of reservation to have about Leao is just, like, it's just chaos when he's on the bench.
Like, yeah, but that's good in international football.
Yeah, no, yeah, it is. It is, but it's quite hard to have a cohesive system, also with a Cristiano Ronaldo type. In that, you can only afford to have so many of those types of players in a squad that is functional, in a team that's functional.
Yeah, that's why Bruno and Ronaldo are rarely at their best together, I think.
Like, I think he's been great in the kind of like flashes. This is Leo in the flashes that he's shown, but it's great to watch because it is just chaos. Like he seems like one of those players who has no idea what he's doing at any point, but he's just got really good skills and really good reactions that he always just keeps going till it works out, or till he gets to a point where he's like, right, I'll turn around and then I'll pass the ball back out.
Yeah,
we'll retain possession and then they'll give me it back and I'll try it again. Like that is how he plays professional football.
But he's such a fun combination with Bruno as well, because whenever Bruno has the ball, I just think, yeah, this is a good attack. You know, if your attack can consistently get Bruno Fernandes the ball, it's probably going to be good, because I've never seen a guy. Every pass for Bruno Fernandes is basically a Hail Mary. Bruno Fernandes plays every minute of the game like it's the last minute of the game and they're a goal down. He just always passes forward, always tries the low percentage ball, and it's kind of great. You know, I can imagine being frustrating to play with, but I love to watch it. And it makes Portugal a lot more interesting, because the Portugal sides of the past were actually pretty fucking dull. You know, the one that won the 2016 Euros was abysmal to watch. And now they're a lot more fun than that. Okay, so moving on to the semis. You've got Argentina, Brazil.
I'm so torn on this.
Okay.
Because I think if that game happens, I think that's the game of the tournament. I think that is so sad. I wish it was the final, to be honest.
Yeah.
And for me, this is an absolute flip of a coin. And I've gone for Brazil just because I backed Brazil at the start of the tournament.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't know. I have no idea. Because I could easily see it going either way quite comfortably. Not a comfortable win, but I wouldn't be shocked by either team winning. I can see ways that both teams can win, and it's very much a case of on the day, right? It's whatever happens on the day. If Messi does a madness, right? I suppose that's the one trump card, right? That's the one. There's the one player in those squads that is more so than anybody else, and arguably by quite a margin, able to individually change the tides of a game. It's Lionel Messi.
Yes.
Whether that will be a factor and whether he will actually be able to do that is another thing. But in terms of ability to change a game individually out of very little, that is a one trump card that Argentina have, that even especially if Brazil don't have Neymar as well. Right.
Yeah, the reason it I am a bit torn about. I've actually predicted Argentina to win this one. But Brazil do at least have the personnel that they could basically sit someone on Messi and say, that's your job. They could sit Casemiro on Messi and play Fabinho or Bruno Guimarães, you know, alongside him, and it kind of wouldn't be a problem. And just say, look, if Messi beats him, he beats him.
Casemiro is going to give Messi a horrible afternoon as well.
Horrible afternoon, like, yes.
If you could choose one person in world football to do that role, it probably would be Casemiro.
Yeah, it probably would, actually. Yeah, I mean, he's about as good as it gets at that stuff. And I think, I don't know. I've gone for Argentina just because I really do think they've been really impressive. And actually, when they've met Brazil over the last however long a period of time, they've been, I think, pretty much the better side. And I don't know. I mean, Brazil haven't actually been a big pressing team this tournament so far. They've kind of they've been like kind of mediocre, and they've sort of had things their own way, because as much as, you know, Switzerland are a decent team, they're certainly not, you know, full of attacking talent. So Brazil haven't had to worry too much. And that's really been the case throughout the tournament. So I think in a sense, Argentina are more tested. And yeah, people will say they lost to Saudi, but they got unlucky to lose to Saudi. So I just look at Argentina and I think Argentina came up against Lewandowski, Zielinski, all those guys, didn't faze them. Came up against Mexico, didn't faze them. Got unlucky against Saudi. I sort of think that they've got the goods this time. Obviously as well, you know, won the Copa America. So I'm going Argentina, but I mean, you are right. It is a flip of a coin. And if Brazil won it and won the whole thing, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, sure. I wouldn't feel stupid for having picked Argentina.
It is an interesting point that it's one thing to press a team, but it's another thing to press a team that has very good attacking players.
Fair point. Yeah.
Once that press gets broken, the danger is huge. So if that team that is breaking your press has very good attacking players, the likelihood of you conceding then is significantly higher.
That's a very good point.
But also, if they're, you know, of average quality, you can be much more confident in your press that even if it does get broken, you'll be able to recover enough to not concede, or they'll waste a chance or whatever.
Yeah.
So I suppose Argentina have been tested better in that sense, based on the group games they've had to come through.
Yeah. God, but I mean,
if they do it against Brazil, it could be, you know.
Look, we're not going to work this out. But at least I'm reasonably, well, I'm not certain, but like, I'm reasonably confident that that will be the semi-final there. On the other side, I don't know. I think, what have you got? France and Germany, and I've got England, France, Portugal.
Yeah.
Who have you? I'm going to guess you've gone for France.
Yeah, gone for France. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've gone to England.
What?
Don't like it.
But I've gone for England.
Patrick Van Straten's predicting England to get to a World Cup final.
They've got about as good a route to the World Cup final as they could hope for.
Yeah, but it's so much worse than the one they had that they didn't get through.
You know what? If Spain end up on this side of the draw, as we'll find out in a minute or two, if Spain end up on this side of the draw and Spain end up in that semi-final against England, I think Spain will beat them. But if they come up against anyone else, if they get through against France, I think they can handle Portugal. If you can handle Mbappe, you can handle Liao.
Yeah, sure. That is a very sensible point. If Spain get through, though, I think Spain are in the final.
Yeah, I agree. I think Spain are actually really fucking good.
I actually think I think Spain would beat England more comfortably than they'd beat France, but I'd still back them against both of those teams. Mm-hmm. And against Portugal, and obviously against Morocco as well. So yeah, okay. I think if Spain drop into this side of the table, the side of the bracket, it actually evens it out quite a bit, or it goes a long way to even it out. Doesn't even it out, but it evens it out more.
Well, we're going to find out in a second. So I mean, like, we might as well wait. But I mean, going to the final then.
So you have Brazil, England. Oh, you have Argentina, England.
I've got Argentina, England. And obviously
Brazil, France.
I've gone Argentina there. If it's Argentina, Spain. Oh my God. I might go Spain, you know. No, I'm going to go Argentina. I'm going to go Argentina. Yeah. I'm going to stick to my guns. Argentina to win the whole thing. Are you just saying Brazil? Brazil will beat whoever it is.
I think if Brazil can beat Argentina, they can beat France.
Fair point. Fair point.
And if Brazil can beat Argentina, they can beat England, Germany, Spain, whoever it might be. I think the two best teams in this tournament are Argentina and Brazil.
Yeah.
So I think I find it hard to look past anybody, any of which team who wins that semi-final, personally.
This is fucking crazy that Japan might win this group.
Yeah.
I love it, though. I would love Japan to get to the final.
Japan winning a group with Spain and Germany in it would be...
Japan would then come up against... Who would they come up against?
Croatia, I think.
Oh, Christ. Oh, God. They could do Croatia, man.
They could, yeah. They would then come up against Brazil, but yeah, I think Japan could get to the quarters.
You know what? The largest population of Japanese people outside Japan, I think, lives in Brazil. So Brazil should throw that game just for the sake of kind of social harmony in Brazil. But anyway, okay, right. So I've got Argentina to win the whole thing. You've got Brazil to win the whole thing. That feels pretty comfortable. Should we move on to the burn book?
Yes.
And we will inevitably, in like 2 minutes, we're going to be like, and Japan have won the group. Germany are out of the World Cup, which actually I would feel good about because I did say that Germany didn't convince me. So never say that, get things wrong. Burn book time. Okay, moving on to the burn book. As always, as you know, we pick a thing to go in the burn book. That's something we hate. And we pick a thing to take out of the burn book. That's something that we were fine with. Japan have just beaten Spain. Japan have won the group. Spain, I assume, a second, barring anything crazy happening in the Costa Rica-Germany game. This is nuts. Oh, my God.
I think Germany need to score like 3 goals in the last 2 minutes.
You know what? I'm delighted about it. I love Japan. It's the best place on earth. It's the happiest place on earth. Congratulations, Japan. You're going to lose to Brazil or possibly Croatia. Spain, if I was Spain, I'd be low-key kind of happy.
Yeah, for sure.
I think this is I think now, if I'm Spain, I think we should get a semi minimum here. Well, I could have phrased that better. But we should... we should... We could reach the semi-final of the World Cup. Okay, burn book time. What are you putting in the burn book this week, Pete?
So what I'm putting in the burn book this week is those stupid like news articles you see online that are, let's say, like, this person bought their first house and saved £25,000 a year by doing this.
Oh, yeah. That. Okay.
Here's how you can do it too. And then you click on the article. And you go like, oh, okay, so they cut back on all unnecessary expenses. Sensible. Mm-hmm. They made their lunches for work instead of buying lunch in the office. Also makes sense. They stopped going out for drinks and invited people around to their house to save money. Also makes sense. Oh, and they also moved home with their parents and lived rent-free for 2 years.
Yeah.
And didn't pay utilities.
Yeah.
Moving on.
It's always that.
No disservice to the people, right? But
well,
I don't know, man. It's more the publishers pushing this narrative of like, you can save this amount for a deposit to buy a house. You're just not working hard enough, or you're just not trying hard enough, or you're not making enough sacrifices. It's like, no.
It's always boomer millennial stuff where they're just like, why don't you just fucking work harder? And you're like, why don't I buy a house in London for £8,000? Why don't I do that?
The narrative always seems to be that it's the person who is trying to get on the ladder that isn't working hard enough or trying hard enough to get on the ladder, not that the system
essentially this is Molly means Mayism.
That, essentially means that the system means that they can't get on the ladder unless they literally save for probably about 25 years.
Yeah.
If you're starting from scratch, working in London and saving your paycheck while also paying rent, it will take you, unless you're obviously earning an immense amount of money, then the problem becomes insignificant. But earning an average salary in London to save for a deposit starting from scratch will take you decades.
Yeah, genuinely.
And also, but by that point, the increase in house prices and living costs will have risen to a point that isn't in keeping with the amount you're able to save.
Yeah, so it's an ever-receding goal.
Yeah. So you're in this vicious cycle of just perpetually trying to achieve something that is essentially unachievable. But then these articles are like, oh, you need to make a stir fry the night before and take it into work instead of, you know, buying a meal deal. Because
yeah, and the person who's doing it, because they're always thick as pig shit, you know, the millennial they've got in doing it, or the Zoomer, they always frame it also as like, I've got a message for my generation. Why don't you ease up on the fucking oat lattes and make yourself a coffee at home using Nescafe and not the Azera one, the normal one. You know, it's always shit like that. And you're like, yeah, why don't I do that? And also, why doesn't my dad give me a rent, an interest-free loan of £1.5 million?
It's just, they're always the same as well. Like, I almost start clicking on them now just to find that line where they're like, Sandra also moved back in with her parents and lived rent-free and didn't pay utilities and didn't pay for food.
Yeah.
Right, okay, so she paid for Netflix and then all the rest of her paycheck just was saved. Okay, that's how she saved that money.
Yeah.
I just need to, like, you just need to eliminate rent and food to be able to save that amount of money.
But I just can't imagine being this sort of person who's like, I truly believe, because I'm in a good situation, I assume that I'm in a good situation because I'm amazing at things.
Oh my
as
God.
Opposed to because I've like got lucky or whatever. It's always just like, no, I must be a special genius to have accomplished
I'm just so good at life.
Yeah, it's just like, I've just nailed it, guys.
And my parents also give me £60,000 for a deposit.
Yeah, my dad like barely gave me anything when I was at uni, but just like a grand a week.
Yeah.
Shut up, fuck off. Yeah, you're so right. This is so annoying.
They're nonsense articles, and they're nothing more than clickbait, but what's more annoying is the kind of narrative around them that it's almost, it's not shaming, but it's putting the onus of the inability to achieve something on the parties that literally have no way of influencing that or getting out of that. But they're just being told to work harder
It's perfectly flattering, isn't it, to those people? It's that attitude of, oh, well, you're 60 and you've got your own house. You must have just worked harder than these people, because there's no way that society can be a rigged system, right?
Yeah.
There's no way that it can be set up in such a manner as to exclude people from the property chain forever. That can't possibly be the case. Things have to be fair. No, they don't. They're not fair. They never have been. And they're less fair now than they ever have been. It's just, oh my God, I hate all that stuff. And whenever anybody talks about graft or working harder, I always think this is a red flag. And it's not because, and I think I've said this before, but it's not because I don't think working hard is a good thing. It's because I think the people who talk about working hard are forgetting about like structural inequalities that just prevent it being possible to do certain things. And as you say, if you're earning, let's say you're earning 50k a year, so you're earning well, and you're saving half of that, which obviously you can't do, it would still take you 40 years to save the cost of a £1 million house, which that may sound crazy to people listening. That's not an unusual price for a house in London. That's not an unusual price. Okay, it would take you 20 years to save the cost of a 500 grand house, which is actually on the low side for a lot of places in London. Like, it's such an insane sum of money. I don't know, man. It's really depressing. And it does also result in the city being all fucked up. You know, I see therapy clients in Brixton. And every time I go to Brixton, I'm like, this place is true. I mean, it feels mad because there are people who are absolutely as poor as it gets and really, really struggling in Brixton.
Yeah.
And then there are incredibly rich, upper crusty, recent graduates who are going to, you know, some new sushi pop up there. It's this really, really bizarre mix of things. And it's, I don't know, that should be healthy. It should be healthy to have a melting pot, but it's not a melting pot. It's just the haves and have-nots right next door to one another.
When I lived there, I saw that most evidently at McDonald's on Brixton, Brixton High Street, or whatever, the one that's just down from the tube station. At like, if you go there at midnight on a Friday, it's chaos, right? But it's but it is those two worlds meeting.
Yeah.
In that, and it's just, it's so bizarre. It's so bizarre.
I saw a guy squaring up to somebody collecting for charity outside Brixton Tube Station the other day, and I kind of was like, what the hell is happening? But I don't know, you must feel like you're going mad when you're there all the time, because there's one street I walk down to get to the place I do therapy, and there are a couple of alcoves in it which always have homeless people in them trying to get warm, and across from them is one of the most insanely extravagant looking bars I've ever seen in London, and it's all full of rich white couples basically, like having drinks and dinner. And I feel really uncomfortable in Brixton as a result now, because it's kind of lost what it was, but it's also not fully transformed into what it intends to be. Anyway, let's not go into it. But yes, you're completely right. This thing of, because it's simultaneously patronizing and self-worship. You know, it's, yeah, I'm actually really great, and I just do it because I'm willing to, you know, maybe not go to Leon. And you think, man, fuck off. It's not because you learning the secret of meal prep is not the reason that you can afford a house, bro. Anyway, okay, what I'm putting in the world, in the burn book, in the World Cup. I was talking to my mother-in-law yesterday, and she'd gone for dinner with my father-in-law, and he'd ordered a steak when they'd gone out, and the waiter had said, and of course you'll want that medium rare. And so he'd taken it medium rare, even though he didn't want it medium rare. Because it's quite surprising for him, but I guess he felt kind of coerced into it. And I think steak is this weird thing where people still feel like you can tell people how to take it, and if they don't take it that way, they're a fucking heathen. And I think, nah, people could just take it however they want. They're not ruining the meat if they get it well done, if they wouldn't enjoy it rare, because they're the one eating the steak. It's better that they eat it and enjoy it rather than eat it and not enjoy it. That's wasting the steak. Now, look, I am always either a medium rare or a medium person. And this varies because I don't actually have steak a lot. I tend to have it in France when I do have it, because there's one place I go with my wife. And the cooking levels are different in France, you know, so yeah, it's always definitely pinker than you expect. Yeah, so, you know, you ask it for like apoin or whatever, or mi-cuit, and what you get is going to be a bit pinker than you expect, or we'll get a cut on the bone, which means my wife gets the stuff away from the bone that's a bit more cooked, and I get the stuff towards the bone that's a bit more pink, and we're both kind of happy. But sometimes you just don't want a really, really pink steak, and I almost never want a really bloody steak, never. So I just think that this is a weird thing that's kind of set up as like, you're a heathen if you don't like it this particular way. Like, shut up. I just think, let people enjoy it however they want to enjoy it. It's just a steak. Like, it's not everything has to be like this kind of this like shibboleth, like this opportunity to give the password to confirm that you belong in civilized society. Sometimes you just want to eat a fucking meal without people judging you on how you eat it. I think food actually is this arena where I really see a lot of class and a lot of kind of class prejudice come out. The way you eat, what you eat, whether you eat in public, how you hold your knife and fork, all that kind of stuff. And okay, informally, I have strong opinions about those things. But in reality, if you really made me say, I don't care. I don't care how someone eats. I really don't. As long as you close your mouth when you eat, I really don't give a shit.
So there are levels. There is a ceiling to that.
Mate, closing your mouth when you eat. Like, you don't need to have your mouth open. I don't want you to have your mouth open. We meet in the middle. That's a healthy compromise. But if you want to hold your fork, if you want to hold your knife the way that Americans hold their knives, like absolute Neanderthals, you're totally welcome. If you want to hold your fork,
like, but you're still going to judge
fucking
before that,
Cirque
right?
du Soleil. Well, I judge a bit, but I also know I'm being a dick when I judge. I don't judge people and think, yeah, oh, I'm actually better than you. It's more that I look at it and I think, God, is that comfortable? Is that practical? But even posh people, you know, the way your menna hold your fork with the tines pointing down. Mm-hmm. And if you're eating like peas or something, your menna smush them onto the back of the fork because obviously an upside down fork can't hold peas. I think that's just as stupid. You're doing something that is objectively difficult to show that you know how it's done. Mm. And I just hate all that shit, man. I just think it can all fuck off. And I'm going to order a steak exactly how I want. And if someone calls me a Philistine, you know, one of the nicest things about having gone to a posh uni, I think sometimes, is that I think I actually get to be a Philistine without worrying too much about it. Because you've
seen the other side.
Well, I've kind of got my pass. If someone's like, you're just like a fucking little piglet who lives in a ditch, then I'm like, yeah, but I'm a piglet with a good degree. That is how I describe myself, to be honest.
I mean, the steak thing's weird because I agree with you and I disagree with you. Like, I do care how people get their steaks, how people order their steaks. However, not so much that I would go out of my way to make a point of it.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be a silent approach I would take to that. I'd be like, okay, they've ordered that like that. I wouldn't do that because they've ruined it.
How would they have to order it for you to think that? Would they have to order it well done?
Anything north of medium.
If they ordered it medium, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, also, it depends on the cut as well. So
okay, sure.
I range from blue to medium, depending on the
I think
the
that's
cut.
Fair. Yeah, so if you're going to order like a
if I'm going to order a rump steak, it needs to be medium because it's not tender enough to be cooked less, or it's going to be chewy. It's going to be chewier if you get it rare or blue. But if you get like a really good sirloin or a fillet, you can go blue.
Yeah, Chateaubriand. Like I'm happy for it to be really, really, really.
You know,
bloody.
It's or to the point where it's actually not bloody at all because it's not warm enough on the inside for the juices to run. So you've retained everything in it.
Okay, no, when it's cold in the middle, I'm out.
I would go to that for certain good cuts of meat, but anything north of medium, in my opinion, you lose all of, or 80%. Because 80% of the taste of that steak is the blood and the juice, which is all but gone if you cook it till it's not pink or has no pink left.
Yeah, but some people
people like that, sure. But then I'm like, just get a burger.
Yeah, but I think but they don't want a burger; they want a steak.
Which is why I don't say anything, but I'm like, it would have been more cost effective for you to get a burger.
That's fine.
The same
okay, but that's fine. I think having moments where you're like, I wouldn't have done it that way, that's completely acceptable. But waiters being snooty about it, I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Like, I will take it exactly. Like, honestly, if I was ordering a steak medium and a waiter went, seriously, sir, medium, I'd be like, burn it. Burn it. I don't give a fuck. I'm going to order two. Burn one of them. Throw it away. That's what I want. I want you to burn it and I want you to crumble
the ash. I want
you
to wash while it's burnt. Yeah.
I want you to crumble the ash of the first one over the second one. Fuck you. Like, but just because you think, no.
That was weird. That was a weird thing that I took away. The fact that he said, I'll assume you'll want that. Oh, and you'll want that medium well.
I know.
The assumption. Or medium rare.
Eat a dick. Eat a well-done dick. Fuck off. Yeah, what I will do sometimes is I'll say, I'll take it as the chef prepares it.
Yeah,
I'm perfectly happy to do that. Because sometimes you go to a place and you order a steak and it's like a steak and chips, or something. That's different from places I've gone where you've had kind of a fancy dish and there's been a steak, but it's a lot more elevated than that.
It's not branded as a steak, even.
Exactly. It's like
it's like a fillet of beef with this or a
exactly.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it's like omp de boeuf plus like X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. And in that situation, I quite often am just like, if I, especially if I don't really know the cut, if I don't know the cut very well, then I'm like, just give it to me the way that you would prepare it, and I'm sure that's how I will enjoy it. And I'm totally fine with doing that. But I just think,
yeah,
let's just stop telling people how to eat shit. I think it's dumb. Should we move on to stuff taken out of the burn book, man? Because it's, as always, we are running late.
Over. So what I'm going to take out of the burn book, and I always find this difficult just because of the phrasing of the topic in that, like, the idea that it would have ever been in the burn book to take out.
Sure.
But also I struggle to find things that I like.
Okay, but I was assuming... Can I, just to explain my rationale, I was assuming that you and I automatically put everything in the burn book, and then we maybe selectively allow some stuff to come out.
So this was in the burn book before I knew it existed. Right?
Okay.
It didn't exist until like this week. And what it is my cat Taco's recent obsession with getting under the bed covers.
Oh, God.
Right. So only at specific times, right? So.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
We like...
Full moon.
Yeah. Like conscientious adults, we have been trying to limit how much energy we're using currently, both because of the price, just because of the price of it, and also because we might face certain like blackouts at points because there might not be enough to go around. Sure. So we're trying to limit how much we put the heating on. So the house is colder than it has been in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fine with that, but apparently the cat isn't. So he has this routine where he has breakfast at 7:30 in the morning, then he goes out for about an hour, and then he'll come up and lie in our bed and sleep for hours.
Oh,
right?
Taco!
And if we're working from home, he'll come back up at like 8:15, and we'll still be in bed until 9, because, you know, we get out of bed and start work immediately.
Yeah. Disgusting. If you got out of bed an hour and a half earlier, you'd have bought this house.
Yeah.
Outright. Yeah. 3 years ago.
But he always used to just lie in the bed, but now he's like started pivoting himself that he like stand beside you and almost paw at the duvet cover top.
Cute.
So until you lift it up, so he'll go in, right? And he did it for the first time on Tuesday, I think it was. Monday or Tuesday. And I was painfully hungover. actually, no, it would have been Wednesday. It was after the England game. It was Wednesday. It was yesterday.
And isn't Tuesday night hockey night or something as well?
No, that got changed. That training was last night.
Okay.
But so he on Wednesday morning I was painfully hungover, and Jess had left for the office, and I was working from home, and he did that, and he got under the covers like right down the bottom. At about 9 a.m. and he didn't come out until 3 p.m.
Oh, that's stressful, because I chuck stuff on the bed all the time.
Well, I was working in the office in the guest room, but I did go back periodically to check on him. But yeah, he stayed there for essentially almost a full working day, a full school day.
God.
He stayed under the covers. And also when you opened them up to like put your head in and check he was fine. It was so warm under there.
Yeah, I bet it was.
I filled his water up just to make sure that he drank stuff, because I was like, you've been under essentially in like a sauna for like 8 hours.
Oh my God.
And he did it again this morning. And that is that's something in the past fortnight that I've very much enjoyed.
That's really cute. That's really, really nice. And, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of appropriate for a cat called Taco, you know, that he would want to be wrapped in some way.
Wrapped
but
up.
It's,
yeah,
that's really, really nice. Okay, do I have anything as heartwarming as that? I need to remember what mine is. Okay, the thing I'm taking out of the burn book is early Christmas. I think people love to tell you, oh my God, I just hate it when the Christmas songs start in November. Oh my God. Oh my God, I just don't think you should buy a Christmas tree before December starts. I've had two people say that to me recently. We always buy our Christmas tree in the first weekend of December. Or a couple of people like, I only buy a Christmas tree 2 weeks before Christmas. It's like, bro, Christmas is good. It's one of the few things in life that is good. Christmas is great. If it starts early, I'm fine with that. Christmas is a time of year where camp is celebrated. It's like a cheesy, warm time of year. And actually, the World Cup is very similar to Christmas in my mind, in that the week before Christmas, you go into the centre of London, if you're unfortunate enough to do so, you go into the centre of London and you at least think everybody here is kind of excited about Christmas. The World Cup's the same to me. You think, wow, everyone's kind of excited about the same thing at the same time. That's really nice. And this country isn't really big on that kind of thing, but it really does make me happy. So I like it. I've also been teaching my baby Jingle Bells. She sings it really beautifully. She also has never tried Christmas pudding, but she has some Christmas books, and one of them has a Christmas pudding in it. And because my wife has told her that Christmas pudding is nice, even though my wife isn't that wild about Christmas pudding, when Coco sees Christmas pudding now, she says, yummy, yummy, when she sees it. And also when she sees, she doesn't know who Father Christmas is yet. So when she sees a picture of him in a book, she says, bear, bear, because she thinks he looks like a bear. And I'm meant to not encourage this, but obviously I do because it's adorable. And I don't know, it's just enjoy Christmas. Having a baby at Christmas is great. You get to dress them up in silly outfits. I just don't see why you'd limit your enjoyment of pleasure just for this, for some weird, I don't know, I guess because you're like, oh, my parents like never had their Christmas tree until 2 weeks before Christmas. Who gives a shit? Your parents might be the best people in the world, but you might have different taste to them. You can do what you want, just enjoy what you want. And so that's how I feel. I like an early Christmas. I don't care when I hear Mariah Carey in mid-November. In fact, I like it.
Interesting that this is the first for the podcast that something put in the burn book the episode before has been taken out the following episode.
Yeah, that's right.
When you said two people have said that to you, was I one of those people?
No, other people. But like, I get it. I get it. It's how people think. And my parents are kind of this way. You know, like my mum doesn't really like, my parents, quite often we would put a Christmas tree up genuinely a week before Christmas. But that's also partially because Christmas is a really busy time for my dad. But it's just, I don't mind it. I like it. Mm. It's not, I'm not saying everyone should do it, but
yeah.
I mean, object to playing Jingle Bells to a baby in November.
Yeah, I mean, I have a tolerance level for Christmas. And I find that December 1st to December 31st is appropriate for me. It works best for me. But as long as it's not in my face, I don't care what other people do, right? And the same,
as it's not in my face. You talk like the way conservatives talk about like gay sex,
like homosexuality. Yeah,
yeah. They're just, as like, I said, as that it's it not did sound like forced down my throat.
Yeah, it's more the incessant Christmas music if you can't get away from it. Or
sure, I agree with this. I think it shouldn't be intrusive, and it shouldn't be forced on everybody, especially because loads of people don't celebrate Christmas, or loads of people, you know. My mum, for example, has always loved Christmas. She found it harder to enjoy Christmas after her mum died. I think that's, you know, fair enough. So from that point of view, I don't want to force it on people. But some people are weird about it, and I don't really understand why. Should we call it an end there? Because we've got to go on to the paid one, and we're fucking up against it time-wise. Pete, is there anything you'd like to say before we go?
There's absolutely nothing of note I have to offer at this point.
Okay, I would like people to subscribe to our Patreon. Even if you don't want to subscribe at the $6 level, which gives you access to the two extra episodes a month, which I promise are normally an hour and a half each. Hopefully there won't be tonight because it's already 9:30. But I think they're worth it. Please consider subscribing at the $2 level, which just supports us and lets us know that you enjoy the podcast, because we really do enjoy hearing it. Failing that, if you really can't afford that or don't want to do that, write us a review or send us a message. We always appreciate hearing how everybody enjoys the podcast. Not as much as we enjoy taking your hard-earned money, but you know, it is nice to get a compliment, basically.
Do you actually do something to add on that? I on the industry that we work in, I generally don't look at comments, right?
No.
Just because I never find much what's use in that personally, but I did look at the reviews on the podcast, and there was one I looked a couple of weeks ago, and there was one 5-star review with a blurb, and the blurb said that it was very nice that it was a podcast between two genuine friends who had banter, right?
Oh, cute.
Which I think is really lovely, but I think you probably hate the use of the word banter.
I'm not a big fan of the word banter, but I'll forgive it in this situation.
But yeah, the main takeaway from the review was that they enjoyed the fact that it was two friends just having a good time talking about football.
That's how I feel, because like my schedule at the moment is very busy, and I really hate that. I'm not good at being busy. And so often, you know, on the day before we shoot, I'm like, oh, fuck, like I need to get this in gear, because the fact as well that we do get paid for this makes me think, right, OK, well, yeah. I want to make sure that we do a good job. But then normally about half an hour before we start, I think, oh, I haven't spoken to Pete for a while. It'd be good to catch up. And then we catch up. And then at the end of it, I've really enjoyed myself, and I never feel annoyed that I've gone to bed late. It doesn't bother me at all.
Not at all.
Even though I will be up at 5:30 tomorrow morning with the baby.
No, I'm exactly the same minus the baby. 2 hours later with the cat. And to
with
be honest,
the cat getting into bed, yeah.
To be honest, Jess does most of that anyway. So,
yeah.
When I say most, I mean all of that.
Bet she's a nightmare. Unbelievable.
The caveat to us getting a cat was that it was her cat and she took care of it.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Our cat, when we had one, was a gift to me. And I was just like, does this mean that if we get divorced, I have to do all this by myself? Because I really liked having a cat, but I didn't want sole responsibility for a cat, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even if I wanted to take that cat, there was no chance of getting anywhere near enough Jess if we ever split up.
I bet Jess is really good in a fight.
The cat will tell you that as well. The cat prefers her than me. He tolerates me. He loves
but also
her.
Supposedly this
adores
is thing
her.
That male cats, I mean, generally prefer women, and female cats generally prefer men, which is actually quite gross when you think about it. But anyway, okay, thank you very much to you guys for listening. Thank you very much for your generous reviews as well. Every time I look, I don't think I've seen a review that isn't 5 stars yet, which is really, I mean, I suppose you wouldn't go to review a podcast unless you were either really hated it or really loved it. But we really do appreciate them, and I appreciate all the positive messages that we've had as well on social media. Hopefully we'll see you over on the subscription side. If you're not subscribed, go to patreon.com/patrickvs. Subscribe at the $6 level for 2 extra episodes a month. We'll see you over there. Bye.